is KPFT, Houston.
Point one FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
And just this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
Summer Arnon.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, it is the fourth Monday of the month, and so tonight, in our second hour, we have J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage. This month, part one of The Music of Harvey Milk. But first, in news wrap, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled 8-1 to order the public release of the names of those who signed petitions to put Referendum 71 on the ballot in the state of Washington. That referendum would have revoked expanded domestic partner benefits on the November 2008 ballot. Gay men in San Francisco's Castro District got slippery to protest the BP oil spill, and several European countries there were developments in GLBT rights. And that's followed by two feature segments. First, Persistent Voices, Poetry by Writers Lost to AIDS from Allison Books, and that gives new life to a selection of artists whose absence has weighed heavily on the queer literary world. And then it's Audiophile with J.D. Doyle and Chris Wilson. And leading things off tonight, we have us.
Yes, it's just us.
I was going to say, if you're listening to us, you've gone out of your way to find us on the internet.
Yes.
Because we are currently not on the air because of some nefarious activity.
We are jackless and we are signalless.
Well, nefarious. Now, that's a kind word for the fact that somebody knocked us off the air by
evildoers.
Evildoers. Saturday night came over here with some heavy equipment. They didn't just...
Oh, they did this Saturday.
Was it Saturday?
I don't know.
I heard it was last night.
Sunday night. It'd be Sunday.
But it wasn't an easy thing to do, apparently.
It took a great deal of effort. So whoever it was, we understand that you went to a great deal of trouble to knock KPFT off the air.
It's only been done twice before.
Twice before, the Ku Klux Klan and you, whoever you are, why don't you call in and take credit for it? I think that that's a good idea. We'll be glad to let you talk about it. Tell us why you decided that you wanted to destroy public property, or private property, excuse me, and then to take us off the air. I mean, you should be proud of it, shouldn't you?
Apparently, they didn't like what was coming out of their radio. And they
And that's the one thing. We're not fundraising, but I will tell you this. That's one of the reasons it's vitally important that you write those checks when we do our fundraising. It's to keep us on the air because we are the only other voice. We have all the same chorus of voices that spew hate every day on several talk radio programs and here in the city and nationally.
Right wing.
But, you know, we're the one that has a little sanity working. So I would appreciate y'all think about that the next time we have our fundraiser, that's what this is about. This is the other voice.
I wonder what specifically the show possibly took, you know, made the person cross the line and say, you know what, I don't like this, I must stop it.
Well, knowing the type of individual who might have done it, it could have been the Latino music.
Well, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
Or the lack of reproductive organs.
Oh,
yes. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. It's some hapless criminal who needs the money and just decided he was going to steal the copper and, you know, maybe he needed it for a better cause. Not to stop the speech that was coming
They ripped down the electrical. I mean, the service.
The electrical service.
This isn't just copper.
Yeah.
It'd be a whole lot easier to rip it from someplace else.
So it took a little bit of expertise. So we have to.
This is like 12.5K running.
We have to go. That sounds a little bit kind of suspect.
Well, look, all I'm simply saying is that if I'm wrong about who I think it could have been or the type of individual, call in Summer will answer the phone, and you can tell us who you really are, and you can take credit. Come on.
It's
take
not like
credit.
Anybody on the radio is going to hear it, because we're
yeah,
not on
the... Yeah, you've knocked us off the air. Come
so,
on.
So we have just a smattering of people on the Internet. I know we have a lot more people on
well,
the Internet.
Well, eventually in archives, because this will go to archive, and right. when they can go to the Internet, because obviously they didn't take out the Internet.
Well, I did challenge our listeners on our Facebook group to find us on the Internet. We, you know, I think radios are less common than just streaming live on the Internet. I mean, that's kind of more the way that you can get the program more readily.
I have several friends who listen to the show on Monday nights, but what they do is they don't have a radio.
Yeah.
They turn on their computer and they are, you know, get it streaming over the Internet.
I have to go into my car and listen, turn on the radio there. I don't have a radio in my house. So
I have one, but it doesn't pick up 90.1 FM inside my house.
Jennifer, what kind of co-host are you?
Hey, I listen to it on the Internet.
You get it in high fidelity digital.
Digital, that's right.
As Max Headroom would have said.
Well, let's since we have a little time here, what happened since last Monday? Now, part of what I did over the Thursday and Friday, actually Friday and Saturday, I went to Corpus Christi.
And I understand there were a lot of people that went.
And
I guess it's the Democratic
State. It was the State Democratic Convention, and we're not, you know, being political here. It's just where I, the co-host, went.
And, yes.
Now, and I had a great time. It was just... You know, it was great. And Bill White, when he gave his speech Friday night, I have to admit, you know, he's never been one to really do a stem winder of a speech, but he did. He did an excellent job.
The blogosphere was all a Twitter, and everyone was talking about how wonderful the speech was, and it's on YouTube if you want to kind of search and listen to it.
Absolutely.
I think he's kind of becoming more polished. Like when Anise started, she was kind of less polished, but she became very smooth and very eloquent by the end. And I think Bill White is in the same camp, I think.
I think so, too. Also, the polls out this last week showed that both he and Perry are almost tied at 43%.
Which is good. And there's a lot of things that are starting to come out about Perry. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but, you know, kind of...
There's a difference. You know, Perry makes up stuff about the opponent, and the other opponent just finds the real stuff on Perry.
Yes, and I think...
I'm not opinionated,
maybe,
am I?
No, but I think, you know, it's time for a change in our state, and... I think maybe this might be a good change for us as a state.
Well, that's where I was, and there was something else going on Saturday. What was it?
It was the epicenter of all things gay, Gay Pride, this weekend. And they had the festival, which I thought was going to be just incredibly hot and just like a sauna, but it was actually tolerable. And I did go to the history tent, which was wonderful.
How was that?
I spoke to Brian Riedel. From Arch, and he said that they had a great turnout. It was kind of at the beginning of the entrance of the festival.
Right.
And so there was a lot of people kind of walking through. And, of course, it's air-conditioned, so it's kind of a little
oasis
of coolness out despite the sultry heat from everything about everybody's about to pass out. But they had a lot of booths, and they kind of moved it a little bit further, west along Commonwealth and Yopon. And it was a nice little area. That's good.
It seemed a bit spread out a little bit.
Yeah.
In the previous years.
Yeah, it was a little bit. There was more room to walk and kind of not be so clustered in a single area.
Good.
And then the parade itself was phenomenal. You know, when I just see Anise at the beginning of the parade, that's the parade for me. And it was a wonderful.
And Bill White was able to make it back.
I heard. I didn't get to catch that part because I had petered out by that point.
Did Sheila Jackson Lee make it back?
I didn't make it that far.
I know when I spoke with her in Corpus, she had every intention Saturday morning being back in time.
Now, I've heard rumors, and this is not confirmed, that this is one of the largest crowds ever to watch the parade.
That was my next question. Did we get any totals or numbers?
I think it takes a couple of days, you know, to do that. You know, to estimate a massive... crowd of people on the street, I think they have to kind of sample the population, do a statistical analysis and the mean deviation and All of those crazy.
Well, that's a lot of gobbledygook.
I know. Doesn't it sound, like I know what I'm saying?
I didn't get a chance to read the Chronicles Sunday. I mean, I have it laid out to read anyway, but I would have thought they had something in it.
Well,
at least the one online.
And this is unofficial. I've heard between 150 and 200 thousand, so it could be one of the all-time records.
That's great.
And I think it's, you know, they were saying it was because of Anise and kind of a community celebration. And
a pride.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, a milestone for our community and for us to come together and kind of, you know, celebrate that. Like, look, we did it. We're here. We're queer. And this is our parade. And Anise was at the beginning.
Yes. That was good. They didn't put her in the middle or something.
No.
Better coordination this year?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, what I did notice is that the parade was a lot smoother running. There wasn't as many breaks. So I think there was more of a continuity.
Where were the rainbow banners?
Well, you know, going into the week, this week and Pride, you know, Pride weekend, I'd heard several questions online on Facebook about the rainbow banners that are normally on Westheimer throughout the month of June. And we don't know where those were. Was that a budgetary thing, or was that something that they decided not to do?
That's Pride's responsibility, isn't it?
I think it's always been the Pride Committee's responsibility. And, you know, I know they're kind of, they stay up most of the year, or they used to, so they might be a little bit weathered and maybe need replacing. But a lot of people noticed and were kind of like, I think, upset or a little bit concerned.
Even if that were the case, at least some of them could have been put up, especially around the stands.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of how we identify our little, quote-unquote, air quote, area, our community, our little
corner of the world.
Our neighborhood. It's, you know, where we call home. We stuck our flag in the ground, and we claimed it, and we still hold on to it. And, you know, the parade's there, and it's kind of where we gather.
Was there any conversation that you heard? You were in the parade, right?
I was watching from the stands. I usually am in the parade, but I told my partner that we would watch it this year.
Oh, okay. So what were you hearing from the people in the stands?
Oh, they were very, very impressed. Andy Cohen was our community celebrity grand marshal.
Right.
From Bravo TV, and there was a lot of positive response and oohs and ahs for him. And our grand marshals, Gary Wood and Carol Wyatt, did a great job. Ann Robinson from the Montrose Counseling Center looked wonderful and very much represent great grand marshals, I think, to represent our community.
Well, since you had a chance to really watch in lieu of being in it and participating actually in the parade, what about some of the floats? What do you think?
Well, I think...
better, the same?
I think that they're about the same. You know, it's so hard, and I totally understand trying to decorate a float on the day of the parade, you know, because everything is kind of done. There's
at
not
the last minute.
It kind of, you know, I hate to say it, but we gays are kind of the last-minute type people, and you kind of bring
that's
it
together. That's really why we do it at night. It was the only way we could actually finish it during
I really
the day.
Don't know how they used to do it during the day, but, you know, a lot of the decoration is done the day of, and there were some great floats, but, you know, it just, they're kind of trailers with lights on them, kind of in some cases.
But that's all that really matters. It's
it
a matter of showing.
You know what I really love?
Our pride.
What I love about our parade is how community broad based it is. There's groups from every portion, every segment of our community, and it's representative. And I feel it's very heartwarming to see that and to. You know, every group is walking out with their banner, and they're in part of the parade, and they're showing their spirit, and we're all together, and I enjoy that.
Were there any HPD people marching in the parade?
The HPD people started the parade.
Oh, they did?
Yes. And one of the questions I heard is, were they all gay? And I was thinking to myself, you know, it would be good if they were, but I think it's even better if they're not, that they're supporting and they're our allies.
Yeah.
So...
Well, now, with the squeezing in of the lanes, did that work fine?
I think it did. They put the barricades closer to the center lanes, and so that allowed more breathing room, quote-unquote, on the side so people could walk around. And, you know, I think the parade itself brings a lot of people from outside of our region, you know, kind of from the smaller towns.
Right. And so well, this is their chance to come into the city, if you will, and, you know, be themselves.
And it's kind of...
Be comfortable
in that. It's like a total festival atmosphere on the sides of the parade, because there's all kinds of like little booths, and people are just kind of being themselves maybe for the first time. And so, it's you know, and there's a lot of youth that are just kind of... like bright-eyed and like, oh my gosh, this is like the best thing they've ever seen. And if you think about 100,000 people at the corner of Montrose and Westheimer, that's like a minor little city of its own. That's like the city of Beaumont population.
I was going to say, I grew up in Beaumont and we had 100,000.
Can you imagine
the city of Beaumont?
Can you
imagine putting Beaumont
at the corner of Montrose and Westheimer? That's what it is.
No, I can't.
And you know, it happened. And you know what I love is how they blocked off the Westheimer up until Shepherd. So the whole thing is, I mean, we shut down the
really?
Whole...
Really? Yeah. From Shepherd? They usually don't do it that far.
We were looking for food afterwards, and we're driving around, and it had been blocked up to Shepherd. I'm thinking, you know, this is a major thoroughfare in our city that's blocked off for several blocks past the parade. So, I mean, that's very... indicative of kind of the support that we have in the city, that we can coordinate that, because shutting down Westheimer from Shepherd...
That really actually makes sense, because anyone coming up from Shepherd, there's no place to turn except into the subdivisions.
Absolutely.
And all those homes, and
everything,
of course, with all of the floats back in there.
All of the floats are south of Westheimer, so it kind of is a little staging area, and everything's kind of, you know, there's like... people building floats all day, and there's like little parties you can go back and forth to. So
everybody, floats are on the south side, and all the parking's on the north side.
Yes, parking is a challenge.
It's iffy at best. Come with friends.
Yes.
Take the bus.
Yes.
You can take a bus.
Well, we tried to park, and so we finally found a parking spot, and we walked around. We walked probably over a mile, which, you know, in normal, quote-unquote normal times, it would be out of the question. But, you know, during the parade, I felt, you know, we're walking down Montrose, and we're wearing our beads, and we're just kind of our own little, you know, we felt secure and happy that we were there and part of the movement. And it was like a community gathering.
Well, interesting in saying gathering that at the convention, the GLBT caucus, or the Stonewall caucus, mm-hmm. there. You know, we had over, I'd say, 250 GLBT people in there, in the room, talking about issues that are important to us, and, you know, there was a party that was listening to us.
Wow. Now, was that a coincidence that they had it on Pride Weekend? Because it seems like there would be a huge crossover of demographic and people that might attend both events.
I don't think that the people who were organizing it didn't consider that.
You should have said, that's Pride in Houston. I think you might want to think about that.
Well, let's do it this way. The next one, as far as the Democratic convention, state convention is concerned, will be in Houston.
Really?
Yes, it'll be in Houston. And if we get to schedule, maybe we can schedule it at Pride, so it's easier for us to get here.
Well, exactly. And I know a lot of people drove back. There was several, I think the young Stonewall Democrats had a float.
Yes, they did, and I saw a lot of them up there.
Well, I did notice that the president stayed back, Robert Shipman. He was here, and he was at the festival handing out flyers and doing good work. And, you know, I was very...
Good man, hard worker.
I was like, aren't you supposed to be in Corpus? And he was here kind of...
Oh, well, young Stonewall Dems were there in enough numbers that they were noticeable, and that's what's important.
Exactly.
We were not, as far as GLBT individuals, were not invisible. And at the convention, and I spent some time on Saturday morning in the resolutions committee meeting.
What is that?
Talk about democracy in action. Discussing the difference in an and or in an or to make it say exactly what's necessary. Very many GLBT considerations are included in the new platform.
Now, let me ask you about, were there any discussions about the other party's platform at the state convention? Because there's a lot of spotlight and kind of visibility now. on the GOP platform. And I'm, you know, we are an unbiased station, and we're not choosing sides, but those two platforms seem very diametrically opposed. And I was wondering if the Democratic convention had anything to say about that.
Not specifically, not being critical about what's being said in the GOP state platform. However, what is in the Democratic platform is very positive, very affirming, very empowering to the GLBT community.
And I would say the opposite for the GOP.
And this is something I've done in years past, which I intend to do for the next weeks, is that I'm going to take both platforms and sort of match them up where one says one thing and one thing, so you can actually see the two. I'm going to be unbiased and just sort of put it out there and say, okay, for GLBT people, you know, this one says this and this one says this. Make your own up.
Has this always, for years, it's been this way? I was never aware until recently.
Oh, gosh. I remember 4 years ago when I first came on the air as a co-host, I had a very limited amount of co-hosting to do, and so I would bring information on, sort of like a newscaster. And I always like to take the party platforms and the Republican platform then and now had some very harsh language toward GLBT people, and so I read it on the air. I mean, it's important. We are the voice of the GLBT community here in Houston. There aren't any other radio stations that carry a GLBT program like this. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to inform people, as we do with all our other guests, I figured that, well, let's just read some of the stuff. I didn't editorialize. All I did was read it. And I want to tell you, for GLBT people, all you have to do is read it.
There's some pretty...
It's scary.
Yes, I would say scary stuff. And I hadn't read it before. You know, and I was reading on a blog that there was a comparison of the GOP platform to Ugandan law, which is very anti-homosexual.
Was the only thing that was... I did hear a comparison, and that was... actually, it was a speaker who noted that many aspects of the state GOBT platform were very similar to the Ugandan, anti-GOBT laws.
Very extreme. And, you know, I was unaware, but it seems very, very right-wing, kind of irrational. I don't understand how...
Right-wing irrational?
I'm trying to understand where the party... Who are they trying to appeal to? And as a GLBT myself, it seems like not even reasonable to consider that platform.
Well, I that's what I'm concerned about. There's some things in very unreasonable in there that seem almost counter... human rights. I mean, literally, there are a couple of things that come to mind because I was reading them earlier today. Was that they want to make a law making it criminal for people of the same sex to get married.
Yeah, the person that marries them.
That's the other part. Also, anybody who marries them. That's like a clergy, like myself. If I should marry a same-sex couple, I also can have criminal charges brought up against me. And this is what they want to do. Plus, they want to recriminalize sodomy.
Lawrence versus Texas.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
So that milestone achievement that we achieved, 7 years ago?
Yes.
They want to overturn that.
And so those things are it's those kind of almost inane things. You just go, I don't believe this.
Yeah, it's almost kind of preposterous to read it and go, is this our state's platform for a national party? And it blows me. I try to be, you know, I go out of my way to be unbiased, and I try to be nonpartisan, and I try to see both sides and kind of understand, you know, kind of where they're meeting in the middle, and I just don't see it with this platform.
Well, one of the things I thought was interesting is that individuals that like this, the people, having gone through seeing the resolution committee of the Democratic Party, now I was not at the Republican state convention. I wasn't invited. But the same individuals that fight so hard to put that kind of language in there, those are the ones that frighten me the most.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's no way of discussing in a debatable way. They don't want to have a discussion. They've made up their mind. They don't care about understanding. They are the way they are, and they feel that they are absolutely right, and that's what really scares me.
Yeah, it's almost verging, and I hate to say the word hate, but it has this very hateful tone to it, and that nothing can be said or shown to them to prove them otherwise, and that it's coming from this very malicious place, I would say.
Almost to the point of being hysterical.
Yeah.
It's a hysterical fear somehow in their minds that, you know, the gays, lesbians, bisexual, transgenders are going to destroy America.
It's an unravel. You know, listeners, if you have not seen the movie 8, The Mormon Proposition, you know, I don't have to promote it, but I saw it and it infuriated me.
After you saw it, I had to go see it.
And what did you think?
It's scary that a religious organization, the Mormons, had so much influence, put so much money into California to impose their religious dogma on a state.
On a state. And they're coming from a nonprofit religious organization using tax-free money.
Dollars, yes, yeah. To do that. And able to access other tax-free 501c3, for all of these tax-free entities to further their religious cause. I mean, that's what I can't call it. It's their religious crusade, if you will, against GLBT people.
And
not just us. I mean, they hate a lot of other people.
It's so upsetting to watch that and to see, you know, it happen, and to feel like you're almost helpless and that you're kind of a victim. And, you know, what happened there affected everyone in the country. And, you know, rights were taken away for everyone
that were already given to people. And,
yes.
And that also is that part that we need to fear. But I don't want to agree completely with you that we're helpless, because we're not.
We're not.
If we sit at home and don't vote, then we deserve what we get.
Absolutely.
In California, if the supporters of same-sex marriage had gotten out to vote, it wouldn't have passed.
You know,
Proposition 8 would not have passed. But what happened is too many people sat at home.
Absolutely.
And that can happen anytime. If no matter what the election is, go out and vote.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't, you deserve exactly the government you deserve. If you don't go out and vote, you deserve it.
You know, I don't like to plug.
If you don't like it, you deserve it.
I don't like to plug organizations on the show, but there's a really good organization that does really good work for our community, and that's the GLBT Political Caucus.
Absolutely.
They go out of their way to investigate, to screen, and to put progressive-minded people that have our interests. They may not they don't have to be gay, and it's nonpartisan. They could be Republican or Democrat. But
as
it's putting,
it has been in the past.
The questionnaire is very thorough, and it finds the right people, and it does work that you probably, or myself, can't possibly investigate all these different...
For over 35 years, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus has gone out of their way to screen candidates, do the legwork that the rest of us don't have time for because we're working, trying to make a living and all. And when they endorse and put out their endorsement card or post it on the Internet, I respect that. Now, if I want to vote otherwise, differently, sure, we have our freedom. But if I don't know for sure in a race, or maybe I don't know anything about a particular race, I can be assured that who they have endorsed is more likely to be supportive of GLBT rights than someone else in the race. And that I know. If I don't have a horse in the race, I will vote for the horse the caucus recommends.
And it's especially true down ballot where there's like a gazillion, like, judicial races and all these different things. You know, the sexy races are at the top, the mayor's race, you know, the president, you know, what have you. But the ones down ballot, are, I would argue, are even more important in terms of your daily life and freedom.
In November, you will be overwhelmed by 100-plus candidates and races on the ballot. Page after page after page. And statistically, by the fourth page, most people just quit. Don't do that. Down ballot is where it's important. As a matter of fact, Sylvia Garcia, wonderful lady, county commissioner, she's on the fifth page.
Well, Jennifer, you know, we could sit here and talk about politics all
night. I wish we could do this more often.
Well, you know, it's kind of an aligning of the stars that we were able to do this tonight. But I think it speaks to what's important to us and to our community that, you know, we're on the verge of equal rights. I dare say that. But it's not there yet. So register to vote. Get out there. November's coming up.
That's right. And happy Pride. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
The result is an honoring, a resurrection of sorts, of the poetic voices that were lost to this epidemic, and a remembering of an era.
You can light me up after we'll make a love, or when the meal's just a hunch, let's take this love beyond forever.
How do you know when you're in love? How does it feel when you're in love?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. St. Petersburg busts break up a banned pride protest, recalling the rhymes and reasons of a lost literary generation, and two acts deliver debuts and a seasoned band takes on a different flavor in the audiophile. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 26, 2010. Several queer rights activists were detained on June 26 during an unsanctioned pride demonstration in the Russian city of St. Petersburg. The Associated Press reported that about two dozen people gathered near the ticket lines at the State Hermitage Museum, a popular tourist attraction founded in 1764 by Catherine the Great. Demonstrators unfurled banners that read, "Homophobia, the country's shame," and "Marriage rights without compromise," before police moved in and arrested at least six of them. St. Petersburg authorities had officially banned any pride events. The activists offered no resistance, although some museum visitors did not appreciate the action. Natalia, an accountant who only gave the Associated Press her first name, said that, "I came here to see the sights, not to look at these idiots." Nikolai Alexeyev, a leader in Russia's beleaguered lesbian gay rights movement, told reporters after the aborted rally that, "This is outrageous that police stopped us and they didn't give us a chance to speak about the violation of our rights. There's little support for sexual minorities in Russian society." Moscow Mayor Yuri Lushkov has repeatedly banned pride events and infamously called them satanic. Rights activists there successfully held two flash mob pride events in May, but only because they'd fooled police into believing the events would be held in other parts of the city.
About 600 people marched in a pride parade in the Czech city of Brno on the same day. Initial reports said that about 150 right-wing nationalists gathered to protest the event, but that a heavy police presence separated the two groups, and that there were no violent confrontations. Officials said that a few eggs and smoke bombs were thrown at the procession, and that seven anti-queer protesters were arrested. Pride organizers said that a post-parade party had been planned at a popular club later that night.
There were reports this week that police have raided several private gay parties during the past few weeks in Syria. According to GayMiddleEast.com, more than 25 men were arrested in the most recent raid. A majority of them have been charged with indulging in homosexual acts, while others have been charged with dealing or possessing illegal drugs, organizing obscene parties, and encouraging homosexual behavior. All the detainees are believed to still be in police custody, and their families have refused to pay their bail or even visit them. The mere accusation of homosexuality in Syria carries a dangerous stigma, even if a detainee is released without charge. Convictions carry punishments of up to 3 years in prison.
The European Court of Human Rights has ruled that its member states are not required to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples, and that the specific denial of marriage equality is not a human rights violation. The decision issued by the court in Strasbourg this week involved a gay couple from Austria, Horst Schulk and Johann Kopf, who were refused a marriage license in Vienna in 2002. Their legal challenge worked its way through the country's court system before being appealed to the Eurocourt. The seven justices noted that this was the first case to come before them involving the right of same-gender couples to civil marriage, and that there is no consensus among member states on the issue. While a few European nations have extended marriage equality to same-gender partners, they said that those actions narrowly reflected each country's vision of the role of marriage in their respective societies. The Austrian couple claimed that Article 12 of the European Convention on Human Rights guarantees the right to marry. But the judges noted that the document was drawn up in 1950, when marriage was clearly understood in the traditional sense of being a union between partners of different sex.
The justices did, however, acknowledge the evolving definition of family, writing that a cohabiting same-sex couple living in a stable de facto partnership falls within the notion of family life, just as the relationship of a different-sex couple in the same situation would, and that same-sex couples are just as capable as different-sex couples of entering into stable, committed relationships. Consequently, they are in a relevantly similar situation to a different sex couple as regards their need for legal recognition and protection of their relationship. Austria created registered partnerships for same-gender couples earlier this year, but the rights they grant fall short of marriage equality and do not include adoption. Nevertheless, the decision went on to say that since Austria has instituted a same-gender partnership law, justices had to consider only whether the country was required to offer any alternative form of legal recognition. The court held that Austria was not obliged to do so.
Seven European countries, Belgium, Iceland, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Spain, and Sweden, have extended full marriage equality to gay and lesbian couples. Britain, Germany, France, and Austria offer some form of civil or registered partnerships that provide many, but not all, the rights and responsibilities of heterosexual marriage. The court's rulings are binding on all 47 nations of the Council of Europe that have signed on to the Human Rights Charter. A ruling for the Austrian couple would have had a significant impact on more conservative member states that currently grant no legal recognition of any kind to same-gender couples. Most analysts believe that decision basically maintains the status quo. The British government intervened in support of Austria, while four NGOs, including the European region of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans, and Intersex Association, known by the acronym ILGA, intervened on the side of the gay couple. ILGA Europe spokesman Martin K.I. Christensen issued a statement noting that the court had recognized a rapid evolution of social attitudes toward same-sex couples. As more and more countries provide legal recognition, Europe as a whole is gradually moving toward full equality for same-sex families.
A Berlin court ruled earlier this month that same-gender couples who marry in nations where it is legal are not married in Germany, but are registered partners, the country's form of legal recognition for those couples. Andreas Bucher had sought recognition of his 2006 Canadian marriage to his Spanish husband. Prior to the ruling, Bucher's identity documents labeled him single. So the determination that he is, in fact, in a registered partnership was seen by some queer activists as a partial legal victory. Spain recognizes the two men as husbands.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this week in favor of publicly disclosing the names of those who had signed petitions for Referendum 71, a ballot measure in the state of Washington that would have repealed expanded domestic partner rights for same-gender couples that had been passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. Conservative forces behind Referendum 71 wanted the names to remain private, claiming that disclosure would violate their free speech rights and that considerable harm and harassment could come to the petitioners if their names were made public. A brief filed in support of the disclosure noted that more than a million names of signers of petitions for referenda and initiatives opposing gay marriage have been posted on the Internet, yet there is no evidence that any of these signers has faced any threat of retaliation or harassment. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts said that the plaintiffs' arguments about potential harm were secondary to the fundamental question before the court of whether such disclosure violates the First Amendment. Faced with the state's unrebutted arguments that only modest burdens attend the disclosure of a typical petition, the ruling concluded, plaintiffs' broad challenge to the Washington Public Records Act must be rejected. Justice Clarence Thomas offered the only dissent in the 8-1 decision. Voters rejected Referendum 71 in November 2008 by a margin of 53-47%.
Australia's first female prime minister, Julia Gillard, appears to be in support of maintaining the federal law that defines marriage as exclusively heterosexual. She became the nation's leader this week after Kevin Rudd stepped down on the heels of waning support for him in his Labour Party, and as his party's popularity slips in opinion polls leading up to national elections. Rudd, who took office in 2007, opposed marriage equality and was seen by some to be in the pocket of the Christian right, at least on that contentious issue. There are those who are hoping that the Welsh-born Gillard, who had been Rudd's deputy prime minister, may not be as doctrinaire as her predecessor. Alex Greenwich, who leads Australian marriage equality, said that his group hopes to meet soon with the new prime minister. "We are hopeful Julia Gillard has an open mind on marriage equality," his statement read. Unlike Kevin Rudd, she is not known for putting conservative religious prejudices ahead of legal equality and fundamental human rights. Responding to our email request for his perspective, This Way Out Brisbane-based correspondent John Frame wrote that, "There's no doubt that this close to an election, she'll avoid seeing anything to stir up the mad handful of overly represented fundy Christians." The Green Party, under long-term openly gay leader Bob Brown, has always been pro-equity, he continued. But the bills they introduce get voted down by both major parties. The Greens' vote is rising constantly, and they stand a good chance of holding the balance of power after the next election.
And finally, gay men in San Francisco's Castro District rolled around in oil this week to raise money for the wildlife that is suffering in the Gulf of Mexico from the massive BP spill. The San Francisco Weekly reported that the wrestling matches were part of Fatopia, a queer ecology exhibit about crude oil issues. The grappling and vegetable oil on a plastic sheet represented wasted oil that continues to spew into and onto the U.S. Gulf Coast. According to the Weekly, it got so slippery that half the men were naked by the end of their matches.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 26, 2010. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
Debut artists accompany an iconic band's roots revival in The Audiophile later in this half hour.
They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. The strongest leaves of my teachers of my life are moving on.
Persistent Voices, poetry by writers lost to AIDS, gives new life to a selection of artists whose absence has weighed heavily on the queer literary world. For This Way Out commentator Janet Mason, the collection represents an honoring and in some ways a resurrection of a very emotional era.
I was in my early 20s when the first cases of AIDS were identified and reported. The year was 1981. Ronald Reagan was president, and his administration announced that there was nothing to be alarmed about since the virus, often referred to as the gay plague, was not affecting, quote, normal people. ACT UP, the radical AIDS coalition to unleash power, with its infamous die-ins and other acts of civil disobedience, had yet to be born. The first wave of the AIDS epidemic changed everything. The deaths came in twos and threes and fours, then more. A friend of mine crossed out almost his entire address book. Communities were decimated. 25 years later, the memories of those lost are not so much forgotten but subsumed. In the passage of time, in the new faces of the disease, in the miracle of the drugs that came along and extended lives. When a friend told me about Persistent Voices, poetry by writers lost to AIDS, edited by Philip Clark and David Groff, and published recently by Allison Books, I immediately picked up a copy and started reading. My memory took me back to the writers whose names appear in these pages, some of whom I had the privilege of working with, and also to other gay men I knew who were lost to this epidemic. The impetus for this collection was born when co-editor Philip Clark read the work of many of the poets in his gay and lesbian youth group when he was in high school. When he later tried to find out more about the authors, most of them either self-published or in small press editions, all he could find out was that they were dead. He was struck by the immensity of the first wave of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that it had largely been ignored. Later, when he met David Groff, the literary executor for Paul Monet, the two of them set upon the task of becoming co-editors of this collection. Persistent Voices is a diverse collection of poetry by poets lost to AIDS, including poets of different races, genders, and sexuality. Included are the few who are widely known, such as Paul Monet, the first openly gay writer to win the National Book Award for his memoir Becoming a Man, published in 1992, and William Dickey, one of the most award-winning poets of his generation. The experimental, such as Joe Brainard, and surrealist writer and actress in John Waters' films, Cookie Mueller, to the perhaps lesser known but nonetheless exquisite writers, Walter Borowski, Essex Hempel, Carl Tierney, and Tim DeLugos, among others. The poems are a tapestry of experience, with many pieces having nothing to do with gay life or the AIDS epidemic, and others reflecting on the losses experienced before the authors lost their own lives. One notable poem on this theme is Daniel Diamond's His Face in Every Crowd, beginning with, "I see it when something happens to individuals they can't fully comprehend. I saw it at Bloomingdale's on the face of a woman who was caught shoplifting and tried to talk her way out of it," and ends with the same shocked terror I sometimes catch only from the corner of my eyes when he thought I wasn't looking on Bob's face, the look our friends withdrew from one by one. That stupefaction, his own body giving way to dissolution with him caught inside. The poems in this collection are more than poems. They are the memory of the lives that were lost, the sons, the daughters, the parents, the lovers, and all the lives that they touched. The poems are also a reminder of the long, empty silence inhabiting the time since the contributors died. Decades have passed, a lifetime for many of the contributors, and what does this mean for the rest of us, those who have gone on, living without them? This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I have tried to sing my song right. I have tried to sing my song right. I have tried to sing my song right. Be sure to let me hear from you.
Brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother, brother to brother.
This is Essex Hemphill, reminding you that you've tuned into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Homophobia, turn me around. Keep on walking, keep on talking.
We'll move along an unmarked highway from Strange Town to Blood, Bones, and Baltimore in this musical travelogue from the audiophile.
Holly, holly. Holly, 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 show me the money. Holly, holly, stop being funny. Tease me down the phone, never gonna get enough. Well, you know that's right. What's true is true. A lie is a lie when I'm talking to you. Got the rock and roll blues. Pay my dues. Cry boo-hoo. Grease me down with a phone. You're never gonna get enough.
The band Sonia and Disappear Fear have been making wonderful music together for over 20 years. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. For the latest album, Blood, Bones, and Baltimore, they take a slightly different approach musically.
I wanna be your Falcon Newport, living in your pocket, close to your heart. I wanna be your Falcon Newport, above your wallet, that's living small.
Find out more about the album Blood, Bones, and Baltimore at www.disappearfear.com.
Laura Cerulli is the main backup musician for the band Disappear Fear, but she and Ashlyn Miller have an album of their own, calling themselves Mama's Black Sheep.
As I'm waking up late morning, stretch, catch my breath. Dawn is broken, hours ago, leaves me to wonder what I've missed. But I haven't slept well for a minute yet, and it's not because I feel blue. I just miss you so much. About you.
Unmarked Highway is the debut CD for Mama's Black Sheep. It's our first effort together, and Ashlyn and I have recorded many albums previously in other groups and on our own individually, but this is our first effort together. It took us about 8 or 9 months to finish it, and we're really thrilled with the final outcome and how everything kind of came together over time.
If we're gonna be
can learn learn more about the CD Unmarked Highway at www.mamasblacksheep.com.
You come with an invitation to watch movies on your couch. Did you forget to mention your wife had left the house? You said she would be working late, that we would be alone.
Ryan States has an interesting day job as a keyboard player with a traveling circus. But it's his debut album called Strange Town that got our attention.
Strange Town is an album that I wanted to be something very personal and introspective and do a throwback to the 80s at a time where gay artists weren't as out as I guess I would have liked them to be. I wanted to fill a void for anyone who grew up in that time. And this is music that I wish that I could have heard.
And we were especially pleased when he told us about his inspiration.
When I was living in Louisville, Texas, and I was delivering pizzas for Pizza Hut, there was a radio show that would come on, KNON in Dallas, and they were doing Lambda Weekly, and they were, I guess, feeding This Way Out in audiophile, and definitely eye-opening and very liberating, and it was at a time when I was just coming out to myself. I was actually inspired by the radio to do out music.
When you think about him all day at work, your customers are friendly, but you don't work. When you don't go to sleep, you don't care. You'll never catch a wink, though you just lazy.
For more information about Ryan States and his album Strange Town, go to www.ryanstates.com. And there's a hyphen between his first and last names.
Before we go, we would like to extend our congratulations to audiophile artist Levi Christ, who earlier this month won a Tony Award for his portrayal of Jerry Lee Lewis in Million Dollar Quartet on Broadway. For now, that's it for this edition of Audiophile. Find out more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Janet Mason, and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to John Torres, Evelyn Ortiz, and John Frame. The late Michael Callen, with Chris Williamson and Holly Neer, performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by you. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. Follow us on Twitter at TWO Radio. Read our blog at TWOpodcast.blogspot.com and check out our fan page at facebook.com/ThisWayOutRadio. To receive our weekly program content email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WLUW Chicago, Illinois, CKLU Sudbury, Ontario, KALW San Francisco, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and this is Queer Music Heritage, and I think this is the first time I've ever started the show with an instrumental. That was Harvey's theme by Danny Elfman from the soundtrack for the 2008 movie Milk, and in a way, this entire show will be Harvey's theme, as I'm calling the show Harvey Milk Music. This is my gay pride show. And for it, my mission was to gather together music about and related to the Harvey Milk story. And when I began researching, I wondered if I would have enough material. Well, it's turned into a two-parter. And the music you're hearing in the background is also right on topic. It's from the 1984 film, The Times of Harvey Milk, with music by Mark Isham. If you are listening to this show, well, you probably do not need to be told his story. That he was the first openly gay man elected to public office in California to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, and that he served only 11 months before he and Mayor George Moscone were assassinated by Dan White on November 27, 1978. Milk quickly became an icon and a martyr for gay rights, and it seems his legend is only continuing to grow. In August of 2009, President Obama posthumously awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and California Governor Schwarzenegger designated his birthday, May 22nd, as Harvey Milk Day. As I write this in mid-May, I read about events planned for it not only in California, but beyond. But this show is not a history lesson. There are ample resources for that. But to my knowledge, no one has gathered together the musical impact of his life. He affected and continues to affect people on a personal level. So it's natural that a number of musicians and songwriters have been driven to create their own tributes. This is represented in many genres, including a musical and an opera, and I'm delighted to premiere during this hour a new song especially written for this show about Harvey Milk. This is definitely the first time a song has been written and recorded for Queer Music Heritage. So I'm very honored to share it with you. Stay tuned for that, but I'm starting off with a song from 1998 by Zoe Lewis. It's from her album Sheep, and the song is called Harvey. Harvey.
70s, 100 bathhouses and bars. For miles and miles they came with hope for change inside their hearts, inside their hearts. When the man with the big ideas and laughing eyes dreamed of how the world could be, the unofficial mayor of Castro Street said it gotta be better for them than it was for me.
Played only in the event of my death by assassination. I fully realize that a person who stands for what I stand for, an activist, gay activist, becomes the target or the potential target for somebody who is insecure, terrified, afraid, or very disturbed themselves. Knowing that I could be assassinated at any moment, at any time, I feel it's important that some people know my thoughts. I stood for more than just a candidate. I have never considered myself a candidate. I have always considered myself part of a movement, part of a candidacy. I wish I had time to explain everything I did. Almost everything was done in the eyes of the gay movement.
Over the end of the Zoe Lewis song, I faded in the last words of Harvey Milk, which he recorded in the event of his assassination, and I took that recording from the film, The Times of Harvey Milk. That film is stunning, and I much encourage you to watch it. I did so again while preparing this show, and even though I had seen it before, I am not ashamed to admit I was moved to tears during the scenes showing the candlelight march to City Hall, the evening of the deaths. The city was stunned to an incredible silence. I think it was appropriate that the observance marked the first performance by the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, which had just formed and had only had their first rehearsal less than a month earlier. For their own 25th anniversary concert, they sang one of the songs they did that night in 1978, Thou Lord Our Refuge. And I'll go from that to another singer on hand that night, Joan Baez, who contributed Amazing Grace. After Amazing Grace by Joan Baez, you heard a little of a much noisier version. What that clip lacks in sound quality, it makes up in history, as that again was the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, this time from the 30th anniversary observance at City Hall in November of 2008. Two of my musical heroes are Romanowski and Phillips. During the 80s and early 90s, Ron Romanowski and Paul Phillips recorded 8 albums and over 100 songs that chronicled gay culture. They were kind of the soundtrack of our lives, and their political passion was often evident in their songs. Harvey Milk was mentioned in the second verse of the song, Homophobia.
There was a man who took a stand to try to shed some light. He said that sexual preference is a basic human right. The school board laid him off and said the budget was too tight. But it sounds suspiciously like homophobia to me. A woman with a child of 6 could find no place to live. And finally her lover said, why don't you just move in? The landlord made excuses and raised the rent again.
sounds suspiciously like homophobia to me. It happens every day, no matter what they say, it's just because you're gay. Homophobia, it happens everywhere, you know it's out of fear, it's just because you're queer. Homophobia. Some liberals say that it's okay for people to be queer, as long as they don't flaunt it. But it seems to me, my dear, that we've seen straight folks flaunt their sexuality for years. Sounds suspiciously like homophobia to me. There was a man who shot our first gay supervisor dead. The Twinkies made him do it, that's what his attorney said. He could have gotten life, but he got 7 years instead. Sounds suspiciously like homophobia to me. Happens left and right, that's why we must unite. We gotta stand and fight that old homophobia.
I think I just heard the word homophobia for the first time. It, you know, it hasn't always been around. Somebody finally coined it, and it was, people were using it a lot, and I thought there was something kind of musical about it. Just like the sound of it. And that's where I came up with the ho, ho, homophobia. And that was the first song that Paul and I wrote together.
There's a song that went through many changes and rewrites, and we wrote new material for it all the time. When you're writing topical songs, the topics change quite frequently, so in order to keep current, you have to rewrite them. And it's fun to do that, actually.
And that was Ron and then Paul commenting briefly on their song, Homophobia. The song appeared on their 1986 album, Trouble in Paradise, and during the time period in which they were recording that album, Dan White committed suicide, which again brought home the lyrics for them. I mentioned that Harvey Milk is continuing to influence songwriters. An example is a young artist living in San Francisco, Neil Aaron. He was an extra in the movie Milk, and that helped inspire him.
Why did you write the song, Harvey?
Well, you know, I was very inspired by just, you know, living in San Francisco, and I'm on Castro Street every day. I probably walk by his old camera shop every day, and, you know, I've heard a lot about Harvey, and I read the Life and Times of Harvey Milk, the book, but it was when filming started that I really became very interested. The more I was starting to learn about him and the history of the gay civil rights movement and just him as a person, talking to his friends, and I just started really getting a feel for him. So it really started my singer-songwriter wheel turning.
Tell me about the song itself.
I like to write in a lot of metaphor and a lot of, you know, visual stuff. And with knowing the history, you know, I just kept researching and reenacting the scenes. You know, I was an extra on the film, watching it all go down and being, you know, dressed in the clothes, and really made me feel like I was there. And so the song really comes from feeling like I relived it, but I didn't, kind of, like, here I am 30 years later, and, you know, kind of reflective of what's changed, what's not changed, and, you know, that I still feel his presence with me.
There's one line in the song that I want to reference that I'm not sure people who don't know history would get, the shot that burst through the closet door, white knights were waging war.
Well, the burst through the closet door, he once had said in a speech, if a bullet should pass through his brain, let it burst through every closet door that's out there. And actually, in his old camera shop, there's a mural of him and it's a gun and it has that quote coming out of the gun going towards his head, I felt like it was a very, very vivid wording that he had used, and I really liked it. And White Knight, where, you know, the White Knight riots, and I kind of play on the word knight because it, you know, like if you think of knights dressed up in armor, you know, white knights, and then, you know, waging war, but at the same time it's the White Knight riots. You know, that was when the, you know, the verdict came in that it was manslaughter. You know, and there was a big riot downtown, and, you know, I got to reenact the riot too. And it was like, you know, having Cleve Jones there and Danny Nicoletta and having them tell their firsthand accounts of what that night was like, you know, it really puts you in that moment. And you know, you have all these burning things and you're just like so angry. And it was just such a part of the story.
Castro Street, in the camera shop, at a meet and greet, hit the pavement, shaking hands, bring me your weary to take a stand, you're recruiting me, 30 years later, I'm still walking, I feel you here, at my side. In case you're watching, I'm just about to hit my stride. On the stairs of City Hall, one step forward, then back we fall. Breaking trail, taking the lead. If at first you don't succeed, you're recruiting me. 30 years later, I'm still walking. I feel you here at my side. Harvey, just in case you're watching, I'm just about to hit my stride. Shot that burst through the closet door. White knights are waging war. After the candle, we raise the torch. From the battlefield to your front porch. 30 years later, I'm still walking. I feel you here. In case you're watching, I'm just about to hit my stride.
The song Harvey by Neil Aaron. I told you earlier that there is a musical. It's called The Harvey Milk Show, written by Dan Pruitt and Patrick Hutchinson. And since its creation in 1991, it's been performed in many cities across the country. From the cast album from 1996 is the song We the People.
We the people stand united for the rights of everyone. Let the slightest not be slighted, no one's due must go undone. We the people shall proclaim it to the least of these our kin. These who love may dare to name it, these who dare are welcomed in. The smaller, these the younger, these who crave a gentle breast,
these whose hearts and bellies hunger, these who strive and find no rest, these the slighted, mocked, and taunted, these outside the rightful feast, these whose doors the wolves have haunted, these who daily face the beast, these the faceless, these unheeded, these who taste the bitter blade, these the wasted, these unneeded, let no promise be betrayed, let the people stand united, let our children stand and sing, let the torch at last be lighted, let the sound of freedom ring, we the people stand united, let the people stand and sing, let the torch at last be lighted, let the sound of freedom ring.
Going to come back to the musical The Harvey Milk Show later, but I also want to share with you a bit of the opera called Harvey Milk. This was a very ambitious and well-received work, and its world premiere was by the Houston Grand Opera in January of 1995. With music by Stuart Wallace and libretto by Michael Corey, it's also been performed all over the world, and the recording we have was by the San Francisco Opera in 1996. It is such a dynamic work that continually flows through the story that it was a bit hard for me to pick what to play for you and what would make sense out of context. But I went for the piece telling of his first campaign for office, where the character Anne Cronenberg tells of meeting Harvey and becoming his campaign manager.
Selling Girl Scout cookies.
that must have been a thrilling piece to see live. In that section called A Street Campaign, the main voices of Ann Cronenberg and Harvey Milk were by Jill Grove and Robert Orth. I've got a very political act for you now, as evidenced by their name, Queer Conscience. The gay agenda message that drove their music was their whole reason for forming. Their song about Harvey was from their 1993 CD, Back to the Other World. I interviewed the founding members for my March show and asked Rick Creswell about the song Harvey, the Ballad of Harvey Milk.
Well, it's a story that a lot of us know about, being one of the first out people in politics in San Francisco. And this is just kind of a tribute to him, and I was really happy to hear, this was maybe 10 years ago, that someone had been visiting San Francisco. It went into the public library, and they were having some kind of remembrance of Harvey Milk. And right on display was the lyrics to my song, which I thought was very cool.
Give us a voice. His challenge to discrimination was to offer us a choice. Determined to stretch social limits and to teach them all to see. A young boy's voice in a phone call said, thanks for helping.
Hi, this is Rick Cresswell
and Jamie Pierce
of Queer Conscience, and you're listening to
Queer Music Heritage.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And this month, there's a part two to the show, which includes a number of songs about Dan White. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. In my research for Harvey Milk-themed songs, I came upon several that incorporated Harvey's speeches into a song, or simply just put music behind them, as is the case of this one by a group called Causecast.
Somewhere in Des Moines or San Antonio, there's a young gay person who all of a sudden realizes that she or he is gay, knows that if the parents find out, they'll be tossed out of the house, the classmates will taunt the child, and the Anita Bryans and John Briggs are doing their bit on TV, and that child has several options: staying in a closet, suicide, and then one day that child might open a paper and it says, homosexual elected in San Francisco, and there are two new options. Option is to go to California. Stay in San Antonio and fight. 2 days after I was elected, I got a phone call. The voice was quite young. It was from Altoona, Pennsylvania. And the person said, thanks. And you've got to let gay people know that that young child and the thousands and thousands like that child know that there's hope for a better world. There's hope for a better tomorrow. Without hope, the only gays, but those blacks, the Asians, the disabled, the seniors, the essence, without hope, the essence give up. I know that you cannot live on hope alone, but without it, life is not worth living. And you, gotta give them hope.
You might call that Harvey Milk's Give 'Em Hope speech, and he used that message again and again in many speeches. This brings us to the world premiere I told you about, of a song written especially for this show. One of my artist friends who I much respect is Tim Kaine. He's an award-winning artist, and he was the founder of Chicago's first queer boy rock band called Boys Entrance. When I started working on this show in March, it occurred to me that, well, he's written so many political songs, he might have one about Harvey Milk. So I wrote and asked him that. He said he didn't, but he would write me one. And it happened, and I'm thrilled. He wrote it with Brett Allen Basil of the band Pink Sheep, and I got Tim to talk about the new song.
It's my sincere wish that Harvey's smiling today, and that he continued to do so when the recording is finally unveiled on your show. He was actually the best man at my gay union in City Hall in San Francisco last year. I truly felt his presence that day. You know, it felt fated that my beloved Santos and I were brought to stand in front of him, our martyr. It was his bust at City Hall during our union ceremony. And that was one of the most profound days of my queer activist life. I hope I contributed in some small way to his legend, and remembering that legends continue because stories are told and retold. What's your feeling about the song?
I am honored. I'm very pleased. It's everything I wanted.
I was delighted that you invested me with that responsibility, and he was someone whom I wanted to honor. And for whatever reason, Boys Entrance has done a number of tributes to people, from Freddie Mercury to Princess Diana and John Henry Damski, and, you know, and Harry Hay, of course. So in one respect, I had been thinking about doing something for Harvey, but I kind of thought, well, maybe I've done too many of these death mask tributes. So I was really happy when you asked me to do it, and I was pleased with the lyric and the way it came out.
Again, I am very honored for this song to be written for this show. Tim Kaine and Boys Entrance and Give 'Em Hope. I said I would get back to the musical, The Harvey Milk Show. Well, I've got something pretty rare from the show, something not released commercially. In fact, these next two recordings were done about 4 years before the cast recording was made. That show premiered in Atlanta, so it was only natural for that city's choruses to embrace it. GALA is the organization supporting the gay and lesbian choral movement, and they have festivals every few years. When the Atlanta choruses went to the GALA Festival in 1992 in Denver, they presented two songs from the musical. First, here's the Atlanta Gay Men's Chorus with a live version of the song you heard earlier, We the People. and then you'll hear the Atlanta Feminist Women's Chorus perform the show's closing song, Young Man.
The Atlanta Gay Men's Chorus is delighted to be here. This piece, We the People, closes the first act. It's at the point in the show where everyone believes that it'll happen, and that it can happen, and that it should happen. And this is the text of We the People.
September, a brand new musical based on the life of Harvey Milk premiered in Atlanta and set the town on its ear. This year, San Francisco's Theater on the Square will host the West Coast premiere of the Harvey Milk Show.
Harvey Milk was the first openly gay candidate ever to win election to public office in this country. Only 11 months after his election, he and the mayor of San Francisco were assassinated by a fellow city supervisor who served less than 5 years for the crime.
The Harvey Milk Show takes us back to the 70s, a dark and troubled decade, but a decade, too, of hope and promise.
At the end of the show, when the hope and promise of his election seem to have died along with Harvey himself, when Harvey's grieving lover is alone on stage, lost and drowning in his own anger, Harvey makes one last entrance to deliver one final challenge.
Harvey asks, "Is there anything about us, our life together, did any of it mean anything to you?"
His lover replies, Why do you think I'm still so damn mad?
Good. Be mad. Because mad is energy. And energy is the power to say, this is not going to do. But then get up and do something.
Got an internet friend who's a gay chorus expert, and I want to thank Greg Allen for providing me with those two tracks by the Atlanta Choruses. We're getting down to the end of part one of the show. On part two, I'm going to play for you many of the songs about Dan White in my collection. An observation is that for songs about Harvey Milk, they really did not start showing up for a number of years after his death. But for ones about Dan White, they were immediate, especially after the trial. I've got about a half a dozen just from 1979. My comment is that, as in the genre of protest songs, anger was a powerful motivator to songwriters. Of course, part two of the show can be found on my website at queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle, and again, I thank you for joining me for this show. I've got a wonderful closing song, one that's become an anthem. And while it was not written lyrically about Harvey Milk, his death inspired it. You'll hear Holly Neer talk about it, and then she and Ronnie Gilbert sing it.
I wrote Singing for Our Lives after Harvey Milk and Mayor Moscone were assassinated in San Francisco. And I can remember it being sung at many events, but the thing that always moved me so was these people would put up their lighters, their candles, and And there were people in the street singing this song, the first verse of which is, "We are gay and lesbian people," were saying those names about themselves for the first time. They were being very brave and coming forward and trying to take the rage and the hurt of the city as a result of Harvey being killed, trying to take that anger and direct it toward the social change movement so that something could be built rather than something destroyed. So it's become kind of a peace anthem, a gay and lesbian anthem, and an anthem that allies and gay people can sing together. In fact, oftentimes in the concerts when I start to sing that song, people stand and take hands and sing it together as a real glue in their community, which is very moving to me.
Listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations,